Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Get your brand on board with our pod with a sponsorship campaign and get into the earphones of 100,000 plus highly engaged listeners within our show and across Acast's other famous podcasts. I'll even come up with the creative for you. Get in touch via producerpaul.co.uk and we'll have a chat about how it works. Hello and welcome to another edition of the mighty podcast Insane in the Fembrain.
Fembrain.
Greetings one and all, weary travellers, wonderful people out there dealing with their own ups and downs of mental health. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but that's why we do these podcasts, to make people realise that they're not alone and we are all struggling together. It's all good. Don't you worry about that. You're amongst friends. That's why we're here on the podcast. Welcome, one and all. Welcome to new patrons. We've got new patrons, BJ, Claire, and Jordan. They joined us over the Easter weekend. Thank you to you guys. If anyone listening to this and you want to become a patron, click on the link that's connected to the podcast, and that will take you to our Patreon page, and you can give us a couple of quid, and that will help us keep the lights on and help us keep going and getting more wonderful guests. And all the money goes into the podcast. So if you could do that for us, that would be fantastic. We've also got to push Islington Radio, because we do a radio show on there called The Tuned Up Time Machine. And while I've got your ears, I'm going to tell you all about it. Producer Paul and I, we've got this eclectic show that we do on Islington Radio, which is on the Mixcloud app at the moment. So you just download the Mixcloud app, and then that's free. And then you've got a whole raft of incredible radio shows at your fingertips, hours included. You've got the Sweary Witch, she's on there, the Heavy Heavy. You've got James Walsh, he's from Star Sailor, he's got his own show. Ed Harcourt's got his own show on there. Paul Gallagher, Liam and Noel's brother, he's got a show there. Tom Bright pops up as well, he's the man behind Islington Radio. So do jump up and have a listen to that. Our show is excellent, and I'm not just saying that, it's absolutely superb. So jump up and have a listen to that. So, also, before we get into this, over on Membrain currently is Christopher MacArthur Boyd. So go and have a listen to that. It's another brilliant episode with a brilliant comedian and lovely human being. So go and have a listen to that. But this week on Fembrain, I give you the brilliant Jenny Ryan. You know Jenny Ryan. She's one of the chasers from The Chase. One of the finest game shows it's ever been, I think. I really enjoy it. You know, Bradley Walsh is a fantastic host. All the chasers are brilliant. I'm a big fan of Bradley. He just makes me laugh. And there's that great clip of him losing his mind when him and the guest, even the chasers, is it Anne Haggerty? Anne Haggerty's there, and she's trying to keep a straight face. And the chasers have to be kind of stern, but she's losing because they're so about Fanny Schmeller. And it's hilarious. So have a look on that. It's on YouTube. It's really funny. It's Bradley Walsh just cannot keep it together. And Jenny agreed to come on. I was really chuffed because I think she's amazing. And I know she's quite a private person outside of the chase. And I was really chuffed when she said, "Yeah, I'd love to come and have a chat." Also, I know she's really busy as well. So I've met her a couple of times. She's come along and she did a musical, and we've been out a couple of times. You know, when we're different people, and it's been really. She's a lovely woman, and it was a real joy to get to know her on the podcast. So, without further ado, coming up in a minute is Jenny Ryan.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
How are you anyway? You good?
I'm not bad. Not bad. Been worse, been better, but I think that's everybody at the minute, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. By the way, there's no big introduction. It just kind of this. It just kind of eases in. Because then, otherwise people get a little bit, they start performing a bit and it's like, let's keep it nice. Yeah. So good. Oh, guys, nice to have you. I've not seen you for ages. Just seen you since that. Was it an awards thing we went to or something? Or some after party or something, wasn't it? We all got a bit sweets everywhere.
At the Clapham Grand for the Buffy thing.
Oh, yeah. That was a good
one. That was one of the last things I did before.
Oh, yeah. That's it. I remember now. Yeah.
I only vaguely remember.
Yeah, it was a bit of that. but it's good, though. How do you find it all with the... Do you like all that, like the showbiz side of this?
Really? It's hard. I find that the hardest bit because I am a natural introvert, I guess.
Yeah,
is the terminology. Although, I've read that there's no such thing as extroverts and introverts. We're just all sort of on a continuum, I find that's the biggest energy drain is being on with other people. And networking and starting conversations and it's terrible that alcohol is such a good lubricant for it.
Oh, I know. I know.
Yeah. I wish I could do this anyway. It's much easier after 3 pints.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because there's conversations I've had recently and I realised I'm a social drinker because I'm so. I didn't realise I was getting anxious about meeting up with people and looking like a total dick. So there's that sweet spot, like you say, 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And then you're like, this is fine. I'm happy to be out.
And then after the third, you're like, let's have a fourth. And then it ends up getting very messy. And you don't remember what you've said to who and what jobs you've taught yourself out of.
Yeah.
They'll never work with me again.
Yeah, there's been a bit of that. That beer fear the next day, I went to someone's live podcast record and Dom Jolly was the guest. And I'd had my phone nicked in the afternoon, so I was all stressed about that. And then I went to the pub before the gig and I had a few there. And then when I got there, I had a few more. So I'm like 5 deep by now. I don't really drink much more than that. I'm not one of them. But I was hammered and Dom's on and I kept shouting out. But it was fine. It wasn't. The next day I spoke to my Stu Whiffen, whose gig it was. He went, "Nah, man." He goes, "You were fine." He goes, "You didn't get in the way. You were actually, what you were shouting out was fine."
Yeah, it wasn't out of control.
No, but it was the fact that I was shouting out at all. It's not my style. You know what I mean? So it taught me a valuable lesson. I don't know why, because we don't, you know, when we're out, like you and I have had great conversations and it's, we're not. I don't know why we get so anxious about being out. You know, it's a funny one, isn't it?
And I think that's going to get worse, that almost agoraphobia.
Yeah.
And social phobia because we're not used to it. We've got out of this habit and we're doing things in a very different way now, which is great that there's still the option to socialise with people electronically.
Yeah.
But it's not the same. You're not getting the same social cues. And although I find Zoom a lot better than the phone, because you don't get the visual queuing in of when to speak and when not. I found that I find that very, very stressful. I've actually got, I would call it a mild phobia of the phone.
Same.
I hate making phone calls unless it's to someone I really know. And answering the phone is a terrifying concept.
Isn't it weird? I'm the same. I have to really psych myself up if I want to phone the bank or... Yeah.
You're like prepping what could they ask me? What am I going to say? What's the worst thing I could say?
Isn't it weird? And it's like I was talking to someone and they went, well, they're not going to tell you off. You're ringing up to, because you've got to sort something out. But I have this real fear, I suppose, I don't know, with the phone ringing, it seems, oh no, now what have I done?
Yeah, it's an immediate invasion of your personal space. And it's worse now that we literally carry the phone around with us everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you and I are old enough to remember when you didn't do that. Like even when you had your first phone, it was like, oh, I'll leave it here for now. I'll leave it in the corner of the room. That's it. Very exciting. God, remember going out with your mates like into town and you didn't have a phone. You had no means of communication.
No.
Remember that?
It's
that
mad,
was
isn't
nuts.
It? Hello. Mickey Flanagan. Mickey Flanagan had a bit about that. He said you'd have to make plans and stick to them. Like there was none of this, oh, I can't make it now, I just don't turn up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shocking kind of protocol now that you can at the last minute you can just go, not come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Terrible.
My favourite one is when someone says it's a family emergency. When they're not specific, family emergency is normally code for I can't come.
I've got a lot of family and there's bound to be some drama going on somewhere.
Yeah.
My cousin stubbed his toe, so that's an emergency.
Yeah. I've got to go. Yeah, he needs me. So you're quite are you quite a sort of private person then? You know, so...
Yeah. I'm a solitary, private kind of person all round. I've got a lot of close family and I've got my close friends and I'm very, very protective and defensive over them. But I'm more at home with my own company. Even with them, I, after a certain number of people, it gets to the point where I'm. I have the yen to have a party about every 2 or 3 years.
Right.
Like a big party. And it's great, but it's stressful. And so that's about my limit. I'm introverted, prefer my own company. So kind of the lockdown thing it's been good and bad for me.
Yeah, right.
It's been fine because this is how I spend a lot of my time anyway. This is me. Sitting by myself, watching TV, reading stuff, listening to stuff, learning so much of the time. And for many years, I felt guilty that I didn't prioritize like socializing with other people or spending time with other people. And then I saw, this sounds really pretentious, I saw an executive life coach.
Oh, yeah.
I say it like that. And she's this absolutely bonkers ex-Broadway actress.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. And she taught me about something called circles. Have you heard this theory about the first, second and third circle?
No.
So this comes from drama theory.
Okay.
But it's been extrapolated into like psychology. So when we are sort of doing our day-to-day out and about, where you're having to expend energy on other people and it can be quite draining, but it's kind of at a normal level. That's, you're in the second circle there. So your first circle is the inner circle. It's you doing your thing to re-energize, peace and quiet, whatever it takes for you to get the energy to spend more time in second circle, which is sort of just outside that, concentric circles outside of that. And different people have different tolerances.
Yeah, right.
For how much of the second circle time they can take without going back into first circle. And first circle could be as little as having 5 minutes daydreaming when you're in the middle of like a group rehearsal or something like that. Or it could be, for me, it could be spending a week at home seeing nobody. that's just my style, is I need more first circle time than a lot of other people do. And finding that balance between not feeling guilty
right.
that you need to spend more time to re-energize so that you are performing at your best in this second circle. And the other trick is not to trip over into third circle, which I'm sure you and I know lots of people who spend a lot of their time in third circle and they don't know it. They are, everything's going outwards. Everything is, and they are actually draining the people around them. It is, they're on top note all the time. They're exhausting and they're exhausting, especially for people like me who are, you know, we'd rather be in first circle. We'd rather not have to deal with that. And that is absolutely... So they must be exhausted. I don't understand how those people operate. No. I work with a couple of them. I'm like, nope, can't, I can't get my head around that. That sounds dreadful. Yeah, so there's...
I get it.
But you get it. The perfect bit to be in is that balance. When you're out and about working and interacting with other people, it is exhausting. So recognising... Right, second circle time. I've got to be in second circle for the next 2 days, pretty much solid, because I'm working. So I'm not going to see anyone tonight. I'm not going to do that Zoom call. I'm not going to do anything other than what I want to do just for the evening.
Just, yeah.
Working out that balance. But I felt guilty for so long.
Really?
Like, just for wanting an afternoon by myself. I thought, this is the stuff I should be doing. And I know a lot of that comes from my childhood and, you know, having to pick between spending time with my dad, spending time with my mum and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So there's no right answer, is there?
No.
There is no right answer.
Especially like
but
that.
Nobody told me that.
But that's it, isn't it? Until we've started having these conversations, you do think that there's something wrong with you that when you're doing certain things and the trauma of that, you don't realise of, even like when I broke up with the mother of my kids and we kept it as calm as we could. We never took it out on the kids, never used the kids against each other. Even if we were fighting, the kids never saw it. It still causes a problem with, you know, there still is that trauma.
Yeah.
Like you said, it was, you know, you had to decide between your mum and dad and you feel bad that if you're not, when you're with one, you feel bad you're not with the other one.
Yeah.
And that's bound to affect you.
Then you feel guilty because you're having fun with one. And
yeah.
You think, well, they're, you know, sat there by themselves, or they're doing something else, or they're doing something even more fun without me. So there's either way.
Yeah.
And invariably, I'd pick the one that would make me most miserable in the end, just because I felt guilty. So,
I know. Guilt. It's always guilt, isn't it? I've been riddled with guilt. I didn't realise that until very recently, that I just felt guilty about everything, about the past things that I did when I was younger. It took someone to turn around and go, "You're so worried about the past, you're fucking up the future."
Yeah,
and I'm like, "Oh yeah, I am. Yeah, I was too busy trying to make amends for past shit."
Yeah,
and it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know?
I was raised Catholic, so I know all about that.
Well, that's the end of that.
Everything's
then.
Wrong. Just feel guilty about everything that you've ever done, that you've thought about doing, or that you're thinking about doing in the future. It's generally bad.
Yeah, that's the thing with the Catholicism. It does seem to be, you're just guilty as soon as you're born. You're just like, you came out, and the fact that you're alive is, you should be guilty for that. And it's
such a bizarre sort of. It's an unconscious thing that they teach you. There's the conscious things that they teach you at Catholic school that a reasonable person is going, that is nonsense. I'm not listening to that. And then there's obviously there's this really insidious undertone of guilt that isn't overtly taught, but it's there. So, you know, you're sitting, one of my abiding memories of the wonders of a Catholic education. Most of the teachers were great and there was no religion brought into anything at all. But this RE teacher had a lesson, you know, just the girls in this one.
Okay.
And basically, she literally said this. She said, if you have sex outside of marriage, you will get cervical cancer and you'll probably die.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then she tried to back it up with science. And I'm like, you've got something a bit wrong. You know, there's something, there's HPV and all that sort of stuff, which can lead to cervical cancer and you can pick that up as a sexually transmitted disease, but it doesn't know when you're married. What are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And but you'd have to sit there and listen to this stuff, and you'd know that 2/3 of the girls in the room were like, "Oh, is that true?" And they were the ones who were already having it. So.
Yeah, yeah. they're just more.
Like, oh shit, mate! So they felt guilty. Like, yeah, I've already doomed my own reproductive system. Nice one.
But isn't it funny that it was all? It was that. It was like marriage seems to be this false field.
Yeah.
About like, yeah, if you have sex outside of this false field, oh my god, the shit is going to happen to you. But if you get married to a man.
Yeah.
Then you'll be protected.
And only once.
Yes.
And even if he's one shot. Yeah,
and even if he's shit to you or you're shit to him, you have to stay together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's
also that they can be. I had this conversation last night. We were watching there's a documentary about a nun that got killed, and it was all to do with they reckon there was a Catholic priest that was the instigator behind it all. And
I think I've seen that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're just, and I was watching it and you're like, wow. And they, even when all these witnesses and all these people came forward and started telling their stories, and they never knew each other to start with. You've seen it.
Yeah.
And now they've all come together. They've all got similar stories, yet they're from different backgrounds. The church was still saying like, you know, well, yeah, no, we didn't know about that. We didn't know about that. Mm-hmm. Just to hang on to their bit of power, and I find that frightening. Really, yeah.
That's the horrible dichotomy is that in many ways I'm very fond of my Catholic background. Mm. As a general concept and a lot of the ritual of it,
yeah,
I'm very fond of, and I think there's a lot to be said for having some structure like that to your thinking and to your lifestyle.
Oh, yeah.
But there is so much of it that is deeply uncomfortable, and that becomes, when you break it down, there's the day-to-day level of living your life within a religion, which is smashing, lovely.
Yeah.
Generally, the day-to-day rules and regulations and the codes that you live by, they're actually very positive. But then when you get to hierarchy and structure and giving people power over others, it all falls apart. And you see that in every single religion, don't you?
It's always the human element. The people in charge of it start to get a little bit greedy and power mad, and then they want to keep you in your place and they want to get more money out of you. And but the actual concept of there being somebody, or some, not somebody, but something that created us, and then, like you say, the fundamentals are really nice, and the social.
It's a helpful thing to have for people to rationalise their existence, and it does like codify common sense to a certain extent. Like, love your neighbour, just be nice to people. Yeah, I didn't need to be told that really on a deep level, but it's nice.
Yeah,
that, you know, the big man's gone, love your neighbour, and you go, if he says it, I was right all along, guys. Come on, let's do it.
Yeah, and don't worry about that. Don't be coveting their ox and all that
sort of stuff.
Yeah,
but he didn't say anything about, you know, don't order gay cakes from bakeries and stuff.
But that's it, is it? That's human beings manipulating the words to suit their own bullshit narrative.
Yeah,
and you scour the Old Testament, New Testament. I don't think it mentions bakeries anywhere.
No. Well, it says you shouldn't wear mixed fabrics.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, if you're wearing... I think I'm all right. I've got mainly cotton on today, but there's definitely been occasions where I'm going to hell, basically.
So there's something to be said for the double denim then.
Absolutely. Safe.
Oh, God. With the privacy thing in mind, and I always thought that about you. Whenever we've seen each other, you're always quite sort of, you know, cool and calm, and you're very laid back and quiet. And which is, I'm not knocking that.
I'm like an observer thing, more than anything. I kind of feel like I don't belong in a lot of places, and so that's why I need a few pints to actually insert myself into the conversation. Yeah, you're right.
You kind of, when we were at that thing I mentioned at the beginning, you were sort of sat, and you and Jade were sat on the side and, you know, watching everyone dancing and things like that. And, it's a funny, I don't think most people feel that they fit into those situations, really. You know, that's why everyone gets so pissed so quick. You know, because we're all anxious. We're all the same going, oh, God, what? There's that imposter syndrome that everybody has. And, you know, and it's...
Although that's people who definitely don't have imposter syndrome. And I do know some of those people.
Yeah.
Like they have the opposite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're in circle three and we don't hang around with them too often.
No, no, they're absolutely... They'll wipe you out, man. They'll wipe you out.
I know a few people like that and you just go, I wish I didn't give a fuck so much as you
like you do.
I always it's funny, isn't it? But and then you've got and now you're you know you're on the chase and I see I've seen the you know the shit that you get online and it and you deal with it brilliantly, but that must be exhausting as well when you're just all you're doing is you're part of a show, you're entertaining people and yet people still want to have a pop at you and it that
yeah. It's you know. It is. It's really frustrating. I mean, for one thing, I will say that I don't get as much abuse or as hard abuse as the contestants do.
Oh, really?
They get absolute hell. I get a fraction of that. And then, shall we say, my male colleagues get a fraction of what I get.
Because,
you know, we know that the way the world is structured... and a lot of people don't like to see a woman displaying knowledge or power or that sort of thing still. So you do get a bit of that. It's the frustrating thing is that social media is brilliant for communication. It's made people able to find their tribe and to find a community for themselves that they might not have found in their immediate physical environment. And there's a lot of positives to it, but also it means that everybody with an opinion has forgotten that nobody really needs to hear their opinion.
Yeah, that's true.
They can broadcast it, and not only can they broadcast it, it's the equivalent of getting that phone call. You know, someone's ringing you up. Oh, what's this? You're shit. All right. Cheers. Thanks.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks. And most of the time you're like... And then sometimes it just finds the little gap in the armor and it slinks right through and you can't stop thinking about the one negative comment you got out of 1,000 positive comments. That's the one that goes round and round in your head.
Yeah.
It's just such a nasty side effect of what could be a really positive thing for community and communication.
Yeah.
It's really annoying that not everybody needs to know exactly what you think of the contestants on MasterChef.
No, exactly.
Maybe comment on the food. Don't comment on the face.
Yeah.
Comment on the way they speak. They've got a lisp or something. Like, get a grip.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Get a grip.
Yeah. People don't. They use it as a because they're obviously annoyed about something in their life that they're not dealing with or something, you know. I know I was surrounded by people that you'd be watching telly and all you could hear is them going, state of him, look at that, you know, when I was growing up. And that's I would do it when I was younger, and it took someone else to go, all you do is slag the telly off. Yeah. What are you doing? And I'm like, oh yeah, because that's what I was surrounded by.
Yeah. But you keep that in the living room, you know? Yeah, I still, if I'm sitting with my parents or whatever, we make jokes about stuff on the TV and it can be a bit, you know, a bit biting. There's no way I'd put that into the public domain.
No way.
No.
Well, that's it. I mean, Jade and I would do that. We'd sit and we'd just take the piss out of what we were watching. And it was good. It was good
it's
fun.
It's your audience. You know your audience there. And you're not hurting anybody because they're never going to hear it.
Yeah.
However... when the people feel emboldened to type that, and even not even just put it on Twitter, because I don't search my own name or anything. I make a point of not doing that. When they tag you, or even better, when they actually private message you some criticism.
Wow.
They go to the trouble. Because my messages are only open on one platform.
Yeah.
And even on that, I've got my friend, my admin team friend.
Excellent.
Who goes Excellent. Through things, and she just flags things when they need to be flagged. She's very good at batting things away as well. But people taking the trouble to actually type something in and find where to post it to you and posting it to you. It is mind-boggling. I don't know when I've ever been that angry at something on the TV.
No. Well, it used to be, to
do that. Or, you know, if you're that angry at something on the TV, it's about the programme itself. So you phone the BBC complaints line or something. Not that person. You, stop having that face. Like, I get a lot of comments about my expressions. Like, stop pulling faces. I'm like, that's just my face.
That's just what you
do. It's called having expressions.
Yeah. You can't pick up people on that.
Yeah.
And I think people forget that. I've only seen The Chase a few times, but the chases are supposed to be serious. And it's a character you're playing. I don't think people understand that. I know Paul will get some shit, you know. Yeah.
It's a character. I mean, we're sort of based on ourselves, and it's ourselves dialed up a bit because it's meant to be a bit natural as well, the way we interact with Brad and the contestants. But it is a character. But then I see actors from soaps. So at the moment, at time of recording, there's a big storyline on Emmerdale.
Yes.
Where a character is he's a gambling addict who's physically abusing his son. And it's a horrible storyline. It's really troubling. But the actor who's playing this guy, Rhys Dinsdale, actor of long standing, has had to come off Twitter because he's getting personal abuse and threats for playing a fictional character. And it is, some people have... Well, lots of people must have trouble distinguishing between, you know, reality, fantasy, what's a character, what's... It's coming through a TV screen. It's probably not real unless it's the news.
Yeah.
So no wonder people are believing fake news, but also not believing that that's an act.
Yeah.
It's
crazy.
It's an absolutely bananas world.
I think that with soap operas, it's... Because people watch it religiously, and so they build up a connection and a relationship with all the characters, and I suppose your brain can't really tell the difference between real and not real, and so you start to think that what's happening is happening, and then I was talking to the actor Nicholas Pinnock, and he said even when he's acting, his own brain can't tell the difference, like the trauma that he's feeling and acting. His brain is experiencing that, and so it takes him a while to come out of characters and deal with it, I saw that with Rhys. I saw what was going on, and he's such a lovely dude on Twitter. He's not horrible. He's just posting bits and bobs. He's just having a nice time, having a chat with people. But yeah, the shit he was getting.
Absolutely, it's wild.
Yeah,
and that's one of those things that makes me worry about people, and it makes it makes me even more anxious about myself.
Yeah,
because there's a certain amount. The Chase is one of the biggest shows on ITV. I mean, we outstripped the soaps on a couple of occasions the last few weeks. So, and we're there, we're piped into people's houses at 5 o'clock every day, and there is a certain sense of ownership
that
people feel of you. They feel this familiarity. They think that you're their friend, or that you're part of their furniture. So I found not that long after I started on the show, people grab you. People physically touch you.
Right.
And assume that they can do that.
Yeah. Wow.
A lady, where I was washing my hands in the ladies at a theatre, and she got hold of me.
What?
You know, she grabbed my wrist to talk to me and started mid-sentence. You know, as people in Bolton do, just sort of, they assume that you were party to the rest of the conversation and you are an old friend. Just carry, people have this sense of, they're very proprietal over you because they own you. They see you every day. You are allowed into their home. So... they think that they're allowed into you. Get my meaning?
I get it. Yeah, that public property thing. Yeah.
And as the show gets bigger, and as I've done other things, like when I did X Factor, sort of the day I was announced on the cast of X Factor, I noticed immediately I was getting recognised.
Right.
Like it went up by a factor of 10, like ridiculous. And people in the street were stopping me and spotting me, and I can hear them. The chase is a very hard word to whisper.
Yeah.
Nobody can whisper it. It's so I can tell hard, when people have clocked me because I'm chased. And yeah, I thought it was incognito. You know, I'm there with my hat on and my hair scraped back, and none of the actual accoutrements of the role, and people have clocked you. But it's a nice feeling that you're not completely on the outside anymore, that people do know who you are.
Yeah.
But also it's even more isolating. You are a bit more vulnerable.
Yeah.
So you're safer and more vulnerable at the same time, and people know more about you than you ever could about them. And that's really tough. I've had some conversations with my friends recently about dating.
Right.
And it's basically impossible.
Really?
Basically.
Yeah.
It would be different if I was, you know, one of my male colleagues, you know, going on one of these sites, going on an app.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have not just the power dynamics off, isn't it, already?
Yeah.
It's totally off.
Yeah.
Unless I, you know, ran into, God, who's good? Killian Murphy was round here recently.
Lovely.
He was filming just round the corner.
Oh, there you go.
I didn't, you know, so that the power dynamic wouldn't be that off there.
No.
It would be off in the other direction.
In your own right, yeah.
But so the that's a hard starting point anyway. I'd feel it'd have to be someone at least within my industry.
Yes. Yeah. I get it.
And then the other factor is an already heightened risk of a woman meeting up with a bloke who she's never met before. The first date scenario. That's already a huge risk for us.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
And if somebody has bad plans for me.
Yeah.
And they've clocked they know who I am. That's even worse. So it makes it almost impossible. So I did, I got Hinge. I thought I'll browse and have a look.
Yeah.
And I found myself just being so critical of everybody on there. So
really?
I had this huge list of reasons. Too many photos with your fucking labradoodle, mate.
Oh, yeah. We're not buying that shit. Come on.
No. Too many photos with cars. There'd be all sorts of reasons. Be like, misspelled his own job description. Out. Done. So basically, I've gone through everybody on there and rejected them all for very, very pathetic. But I know that's me protecting myself, isn't it? And I know, and it's one of these horrible things that, you know, you've been dwelling on during this horrible time. That I, is this it now? Am I forever alone? I have to get used to this. It's a really tough one because
it's hard. Yeah.
There's the power dynamic in one way that that women are naturally given what society is like now. And, it, you know, we'd like to think it's changed over the last couple of decades. It ain't, as we've seen from recent events.
Yeah.
There's a risk factor there of being a woman going out and meeting people, but also the power dynamic the other way that it's... You know, if you go on a first date with someone, you're finding out about each other for the first time. They already know about me. They can Google a lot about my life.
Yeah.
This is why I try and keep as private as possible. But and they already think they know me as well. It's like that old lady who grabbed me in the toilet.
Yeah,
she
right.
Think she knows me.
Shit, yeah. So you can't win.
Yeah, it's a lose-lose situation. So, shit, you know.
Man. Yeah. Yeah, I get
until Killian Murphy just knocks on, you know. Like,
you never know. He does his radio show. He does a radio show from his basement. Maybe start listening to that and work your way in that way.
I don't know why I only picked him because he's been all over the local paper the last 3 days because he was in town.
Filming,
like,
yeah.
They had live updates on the local paper's website. Like, oh, a screen has gone up to shield the actors from public view. Like, yeah, they just want to crack on, lads.
They do that. Get a grip. It's the most exciting thing to happen in Bolton for a long time. Yeah,
we do get a lot of things being filmed in Bolton.
Yeah, right.
We've got some really good locations.
Yeah.
We've got some good period locations for things like Peaky Blinders. So
of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I love Bolton. I've got a few friends who live in Bolton. And it's, yeah, I always have a nice time up there. I do have a better time the further up I go. I'm not dissing London, but I think because London's changed so drastically over the years, and it's not really as I remember it now.
Mm.
And so when you go to other places, like go Bolton or Manchester or Liverpool, wherever, it feels like London used to feel like.
Yeah.
So there's still an element of friendliness and
spontaneity as well.
Spontaneity. There's more things happening. There's more. You'll find it. I've been in Manchester several times, and there's always a darkened corner where something weird and wonderful's happening, and which is what London used to be like.
Yeah.
You know. And you'll get more. There's more sort of more interesting clubs, like a band that you've never heard of, but you go, oh, this is wicked.
Absolutely.
Going on
agree.
Further up. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting the way that it's London's out-Londoned itself. It's run out of steam at the moment. It could be a renaissance coming on.
Yeah.
But for the moment, it's your Manchesters, your Glasgows, everything else. They're absolutely smashing it.
Having a great
time.
Well,
they were.
Yeah.
They were. It'll be back soon enough.
Exactly. I think hopefully this lockdown now is, we're on the way out of this one. I'm already booking in gigs and stuff like that. So fingers crossed it's happening. I hope so.
Well, I'm thinking long term now. It's my 40th this time next year. So I'm already like, yeah, let's get the plans in. Let's book venues. Let's be, you know, book some acts. Let's do it.
There you go. There's your big do for your 2 year.
Exactly. Although I want to kind of recreate my 30th, which is one of the best, just the best parties I've ever thrown.
Oh, really?
So Bolton, as it turns out, was home to the first music hall, dedicated music hall in Britain.
Oh, really?
So in tribute to that, I had a music hall themed night where basically everyone turned up and did a turn. It was great.
Oh, lovely.
And a real wide variety as well.
Yeah.
Some people did turn up and do actual music hall songs, like 19th century stuff.
Oh, really?
Amazing. And monologues. Right. And some people did dancing demonstrations. And so we had an old friend of mine is James Harkin from No Such Thing as a Fish, QI.
Oh, yeah.
And he did the Elements song.
Yeah, right.
Just from memory. and then at the very end, Paul Sinha had been on at the Comedy Store in Manchester, and he turned up, two gigs in and several pints in.
Yeah.
And did a sing-along mega mix of the hits of 1982. He even printed out little lyric sheets for everyone. It was adorable. So he sang, one of the songs he did was Star Maker.
Kids from Fame, which I then
reciprocated, and I sang at his wedding reception.
Oh, beautiful. That's lovely.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's funny you mentioned Paul doing that. I did a gig. We're in North Yorkshire, and we had to stay over in this little village. And so we'd finished the gig, and then there was a piano in the corner. So we're all having a few pints, and everyone's gone home. And Paul, and I didn't realise, I'd known Paul just through comedy. I didn't know he had this other side to him. And you can tell him, you name any 80s song and he can play it on the piano.
Yeah.
And we were just going, this one, that one, and trying to catch him out as well, like going a bit obscure. And he went, oh, no, hang on a minute. And he'd work it out. And it was brilliant.
Yeah. Superb.
So, yeah. The man's an extraordinary
talent. But that's what I like. Man. I like those hidden talents that people have that people don't expect, which is sort of the point of my 30th. And hopefully on an even grander scale.
Yeah.
For my 40th, with more drag queens. There'll be more drag.
So you're into the drag queens as well?
Oh, yeah.
You're loving it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's something. It's great that something me and my sister bond over.
Oh, yeah.
My stepsister, so we weren't raised together. We only met as adults.
Okay.
And we've had, pretty different upbringings. Mm. And, she's not super academic. I was, and I was my mum's only kid, and she has siblings and all that sort of stuff. And so we've had these different backgrounds, but this thing that's brought us together is a love of drag, a love of people putting on too much makeup and sitting about, which I've always loved, you know, Danny LaRue and pantomime dames and all that sort of stuff. When I was a kid, I thought that was just the epitome of glamour, was Danny LaRue.
There's
a woman on the telly, she looks super glamorous and she's hilarious. And you don't see that. I think that's what made it such a significant thing for me was this was women allowed to be funny, and it didn't matter that it wasn't actually a woman.
Yeah.
Some people see drag as, you know, taking the mick out of women and being quite derogatory. I see it as, it's quite empowering to women because there's an idealization of women, and these women in inverted commas can do what they want.
Yeah.
But also as a sort of subjugated, marginalized section of the community, you know, women are more marginalized than men.
Yeah.
And yet more marginalized than women are gay men.
Right. Yeah.
So they've chosen women to uplift themselves, which is so flattering.
Yeah.
Actually, it's that, you know, it's a real appreciation society of marginalized groups. You know, this is what we love about women. And then there are women are like, this is what we love. We really appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah.
And the biggest fan base is young women.
Right.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I went to DragCon in London last year. I ended up working on a stall of one of the drag queens called the Vivian. I couldn't walk around. I kept getting stopped. So I sat at the back, you know, filling bags full of t-shirts for her. It was brilliant. But vast majority of people there were young women, and especially like teenage girls and younger. Just families, so that you'd get dads there, and they brought their little kids, and including a couple of like little boys who decided, you know, they were wearing their glittery nail varnish, and they felt really happy that they could just be them. Yeah. And the dads are a bit like looking around, like, this is a lot. There's a lot going on here that I'd never really contemplated before, but absolutely embracing it with open arms. And I thought that was absolutely a brilliant.
Yeah.
A brilliant atmosphere, really celebratory.
That's fantastic.
And
I've never
really empowering for these little girls as well. You know, the young women, they are watching shows like Drag Race, which is a multi-talent competition, and seeing, you know, you can be funny and pretty. You can be great at fashion, and also you don't have to do everything, but you can try all of these different things and not be done down for it, but celebrated for it.
Yeah,
if the people they're seeing can get through their adversity and do this, then they can do anything. It's an interesting effect that it is having.
Yeah.
Not the expected thing. It was when they first put out Drag Race, they thought it was going to be really niche. It's just like, just the gays, man, just for the gays. And it took off.
It's gone mad.
Everybody going,
this is
just a classic talent show.
Yeah.
It's a great format.
I think it's great. And I'm not really into that. Yeah. I didn't really know much about the drag scene until, you know, I was hanging around with Jade, and then it really opened my eyes to it. And there was a moment, I'm like, it was, you know, the old school, like me being brought up. I've always been open-minded, but there's still that old school kind of bloke like, I don't know how to handle this.
Yeah.
This Welker, he's 8 feet tall. And, okay. No, you look amazing. I'm having weird feelings. You look cool, man. I don't know what I'm saying. And then with Drag Race, is it Bimini?
Bimini Bamboolash,
That Bimini for me is incredible. Just that whole punk element to it. Like it's beyond drag. It's art. And it, I remember seeing Bimini and just going, holy shit. It just, it was an amalgamation of everything that I'm into. Like,
yeah.
And it was brilliant. She's brilliant.
Yeah. And Bimini being on there and showing off all the different elements to their craft.
Yeah.
It was a huge demonstration that drag isn't just one dimensional. It isn't just looking super glam. It isn't just being on brand for you. It's about creativity and finding an outlet. And the extra dimension there being that Bimini was really openly talking about being non-binary, where that started so many conversations.
Oh God,
And I think that meant, in my heart of hearts, I knew Bimini wasn't going to win because of that, because unfortunately there is still some residual phobia in Mamaru. She's old school.
Yeah.
She thinks drag queen is a gay man in a dress, looking as glamorous as possible. It's a very narrow view, but it's obviously opening up. So I think Bimini has challenged so many people in their perceptions of gender, in their perceptions of what drag is, in their perceptions of what Bimini is.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you see, they've just signed with a huge modelling agency and they've got a book coming out. and still absolute punk.
Exactly.
Aesthetic.
You can't put Bimini anywhere.
Mm.
And that's like most people, like talking about being non-binary, what I've learned from having these conversations with different people is that people are more fluid than they're allowed to be. Like you were saying, you know, most of the time you want to sit at home and you want to read and you want to learn stuff and you want to be in your own company. And then sometimes you're like, no, I fancy going out. Yeah. And so people are like, oh no, but you're an introvert.
I don't really like that category.
Yeah.
Because I'm not always an introvert and sometimes I do. Yeah. It's, people change and people change day to day and hour to hour.
Yeah.
But I hate binary choices. That's something I really, really hate.
Yes.
You know, what's your favourite film? Someone asked me that last week and I was like, I could give you my top 20.
Yeah.
That might change tomorrow.
Yeah.
I can't tell you my favourite film because in what category?
Yeah.
What's your favourite film of 1960? I could probably give you my top 10. So it, what's your favourite comedy film? I've got loads.
It changes all the time. It's like, people go, what's your favourite book? You go, well, the one I'm reading at the minute is pretty cool.
It depends on your mood.
And I think people need to be more... We're only just starting that change, though. That's the thing. And I think sometimes people forget that we are only just starting to have these conversations. Yeah. You know, I've said this on many other episodes, being from the set, I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, so everything, there was only boys and girls. Then there was the odd talk of someone that was trans, but you know, and they weren't slagged off. It was said with love, and you know, but it wasn't, they didn't really understand what that really meant.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really talked about that often. So there wasn't the term non-binary and the term, like you've just said, binary choices.
Yeah.
Is a new thing to me, and probably to a lot of other people my age. You know, I'm not ancient, but I'm 49, so
yeah. And it takes a long time to filter through and to become more widely known. It's, I do think, and I've thought for a long time that most things are on a continuum.
Yeah,
where there isn't black white. There's all those shades in the middle. So why should, you know, your gender be like that, your sexuality, why should your lifestyle choice, your personality be that?
Yeah.
The other day I was asked, well, how do you describe your personality? I'm like,
I don't know.
Ask me again tomorrow and I'll be able to give you a million words and they'll all be very different.
Yeah.
But so it's, I think it does filter through eventually, and maybe in 50 years we won't be having to have as many conversations, but it's amazing what representation does. I think a lot of people still don't appreciate how important it is to see people represented. People like Bimini, yeah. on screen that started off these conversations. There's so much. I love my stepdad to bits, but he is a 60-year-old Yorkshireman who, yeah. you know, he went to a boys' grammar school and he knows what he knows.
Yeah.
but
yeah.
He has changed incredibly over the last couple of decades. In he will listen and he will be educated, and when something comes up on the TV or in conversation, he will listen and he will take it on board and process it. And then he starts using it. So one of his favourite words is heteronormative.
Wow.
It's lovely that he's getting it. He's starting to get it, and he understands why sometimes when he says something like, "Oh, that's for girls," when he says that to my nephews, I'm like, "Oh no, we can't. No, please don't."
Yeah.
It's just having an openness to learn and to not get defensive about just because something's always been the way you've thought of it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you should think that way forever. It doesn't mean you should be holding on to it till kingdom come. It's not a failure to learn something new and realise that was no good.
Yeah.
Or realise you were slightly wrong and changing that. And that's, you know, it's a case in point. My stepdad, he's going to continue learning. And him and my mum have got my Uncle Steve, who's their gay best friend, and they go on holiday with him, and he's always learning new stuff, and they, things come up that he wouldn't normally have thought of before. And, you know, he's now got grandsons who now he's thinking about the next generation and how things might affect them and how things are different for them.
Yeah.
Very, very different. He's not had to think about that sort of thing before.
No.
You know, I was quite a self-sufficient teenager. So pretty much fully formed. Yeah.
She's fine. She's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something that I think is really important. I hate when people whinge about, oh, woke casting on this and blah, blah. Oh, that does my head in, because if you understood, if those people who were complaining about that understood how important it is.
Yeah.
For someone to see someone like themselves on screen,
exactly,
or you know, hear their voice represented, it's incredible. One of my favorite examples is I went to watch Captain Marvel at the cinema, and it was a few weeks after it came out, and it was term time.
Yeah.
So the cinema was empty. I was sort of near the back, and then this Asian guy came in with a little girl. So it was like granddad. She must have been about 8 or 9.
Yeah.
And just her, you know, every time Captain Marvel did something amazing, like she flew off, she was like standing up and like so more excited than she would have been to see a boy superhero.
True. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just she was agog at the whole thing, and her granddad was just, you could tell he was a little bit taken aback by how excited she was as well. But he had just, they came out with the biggest smiles on their faces, and you think that's so important. Now, imagine if Captain Marvel had been Pakistani as well,
yeah, would have been incredible.
It would have blown her mind. I mean, wait for Ms. Marvel to come out, because she's the first Muslim superhero who's going to be on screen, so that's very exciting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Yeah, and this is the thing. I had this conversation very recently with some people, and they were moaning about the fact, all we see now is black people on everything, and it's getting rammed down our throats and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but it hasn't been that way. It hasn't been that way. So now you've had it your way. Now we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And it's equality.
What skin is it off their nose?
It's just that it's fear, isn't it? That
they're
scared of change and it.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, equality is as well as, not instead of. It should be all of us.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't even be, a thing. It shouldn't even be a thing that you're seeing black people in things. You're seeing people in things.
It shouldn't be noticeable.
No.
You know, it should just be something that benefits everybody.
Yeah.
But think of the reverse.
Yeah.
that is continuing to marginalise the people who aren't represented. They're not seeing themselves.
Yeah.
You know, people kicking off about blooming cream egg adverts for showing a gay couple. Right. The worst thing about that was they were sharing a cream egg. Who shares a cream egg? Maniacs. Yeah, no, that's... Absolute not maniacs. Enough.
Who's sharing that? Yeah. It's funny that it's like the, when the two guys kissing and I said, look, I've worked in a gay sauna. I've seen what men will do with each other. And you know that it's I don't know what your problem is. It's just two people in love. It's two people in love. What are you doing? But people can't handle it. They just don't. Yeah. It's such a shame. And talk about and I didn't realise until very recently that so many women have achieved so many great things. There was I found out recently the last couple of years. Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who's this rhythm and blues musician who you know of, basically invented rock and roll. But I only ever heard of her in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
The woman that created the program that we could land on the moon.
Yeah, like Katherine Johnson. Yeah, she did all the calculations.
Yeah. Never heard of her. They never mentioned her in school once. I've heard all about how the lads got to the moon.
Yeah.
And landed on the moon.
Well, and then people are like, why do we need a Women's History Month? Why do we need International Women's Day? Because of that.
Yeah.
Because history books have been written by the men and just put the men in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know.
Yeah.
I was at school 30 years ago and I just heard about these incredible women.
Yes.
And then when you start talking about these things, like, you're just jumping on this bandwagon, just being all woke and, you know. No, I'm genuinely shocked that I didn't hear about these people. Why? We wouldn't have been on the moon if it wasn't for Catherine.
Yeah.
What is this?
It's wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely wild. And, it's that pattern of marginalisation that we're breaking through it.
Yeah.
We are breaking. It's taken this long.
Yeah.
God. That's, you know, 50 years since Katherine Johnson was doing all that. 50 years.
It's nuts.
And yet, we're only just starting to properly celebrate her.
Yeah.
Absolutely and ridiculous.
I've only just been hearing stories about when in the Second World War, when all the men went off to war. So the women had to come in and do all the engineering jobs.
Mm.
And then when they came back, when the guys came back, the women had to go, had to leave.
Booted, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that doesn't get talked about.
No. No, it was just the way it was, yeah. Well, up until... The when was that the Labour Act came in the 60s, was it? Or this might have been the 70s.
Right.
But, you know, if you got married or became pregnant, they could fire you.
What?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're done for. Yeah.
Wow.
People could, you know, companies could advertise this job was only for unmarried women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They just weren't interested in someone who might get pregnant.
Yeah, because it's not good for them. Not good for
they'll have to find someone to fill in. Oh, God.
Oh, God. It's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah. Shocking.
Well,
it's bizarre, the sort of the equal pay thing. The film, like, Made in Dagenham.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, that's an interesting example. And you look at it and you're like, oh, it's a period film. It ain't that long ago.
No.
It's not that long ago.
I'd say 50 years.
Yeah, it's well within lifetimes.
Yeah. Well, I remember my mum got a job when I was a kid and she got a part-time job. And ended up working nights in a bakery, and you know, and that was, you know, she passed the driving test, and I remember it was a big deal. It was a big deal that she went off and did all that. My nan passed her driving test when she was 50, and it was a big deal.
It'd been assumed for the previous 50 years that she wouldn't really need to drive. Where's she want to go? She want to go and have an adventure? She want to get away? Yeah.
Yeah, not allowed, mate.
Yeah.
Oh man!
No, having to have you know, if you had a bank account, you had to have your husband's signature or your dad's signature.
Fucking hell! Well, the fact
couldn't
that
have you a mortgage
because unless a man was involved,
yeah.
Well, the fact that the whole thing of marriage is the dad giving the daughter to the husband, like that I only knew about that recently. I didn't know
bloody
about that.
Patriarchy.
Yeah, I know. We were talking about privilege a little while ago, and I was like, yeah, the fact that I didn't know about any of these things is the privilege we're talking about.
Yeah, you've never had to critically think about it, because the closer you are to it being in your benefit, the less you critically think about it, unless you are consciously told, have a look, have an actual think about that. Have a think about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the giving away thing affects you as a man less than it does me as a woman. So I've always gone, it's a bit creepy, isn't it?
Yeah.
What does it really matter? Yeah.
But we're told.
Me and my mum chatting, like, my mum's always like, I'm giving you away when you get married, you know. Like, yeah, obviously. No one else is entitled to do that.
No, and you're not giving me away. I'm actually going of my own accord.
Yeah.
Because I choose to.
We're just having a wander down a room to the front of the room.
With Killian. You never know. But it's true. Even we were talking about this when the horrible news stories of another woman, you know, getting attacked and another woman being killed, and it really brought home to me with the guys that are always, they're always like, it's not all men, it's not us, and it made me, and I've done that, and I remember the conversation I had, and it was a woman comic that was with us. I even tweeted about this and just said, I've been that guy when she stood up and went, I have to go because you lot don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about getting murdered and killed on your own. And I went, men get raped all the time. And there were a couple of guys doing shows about them having been sexually assaulted, which is why it was in my head. It wasn't until later on someone went, by men, you fucking dickhead.
Yeah.
It's not women
What's
doing it.
What's the common denominator here? It is, men who want to hurt other people.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of them. And I was annoyed by quite a lot of that. I had to step away from Twitter a bit. Because who was it? Davina McCall was going, it's very vanishingly rare that this happens. Well, but you've got to look at it like the sliding scale. So, you know, if there's one guy who's out there to murder a woman, he definitely before, where we know he has exposed himself.
We know
that he's, you know, so we don't know where that sort of ends. So for every murderer, there's, you know, 10 people who have sexually assaulted a woman. For every one of those, there's 100 guys who flashed. For every one of those, there's someone who's groped somebody walking past them in a club. So we don't know. We don't know who's just a groper. We don't know who it is a murderer. But it extrapolates from there. And I know it's not all men, but it's enough men that we are scared of all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's
and obviously, like you say, men are also victims of male violence. So it's a different kind of fear that you carry with you.
Yeah.
It's you don't feel as vulnerable all the time.
No.
But you still are. You risk assessing.
Yeah.
Because
definitely.
You're a sensible person. You risk assess all the time, and it's an exhausting part of women's emotional labour to be perpetually working out the safe way to do things, the safer way to do things.
Yeah.
And the horrible thing that somebody pointed out the other day was when we're told, you know, your mum's always telling you, you know, you take the other route home, make sure you get a taxi, you know, avoid this, avoid that, don't put yourself in the situation. Yeah. The fact is, if there's someone out there who wants to go and hurt a woman, you're basically, by making yourself safer, you're putting another woman at risk.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So our behaviour is not the problem.
No. Well, that's it, isn't it? It's the fact that women are the ones told, you know, there's a comedian called Chad Daniels, and he's got this great bit about saying to when his daughter goes out, he's like, oh, look, you know, just don't go off with guys, don't do this, don't do that. And he says all these, but he said there's only two things that he has to say to his son, and that's drive safe, don't rape anyone.
Yeah.
And people go, why are you saying that to your son? Because those are the two things I don't want him to do. And I think it's perfectly reasonable to remind people of big things.
Yeah.
You know, and it is, and when Davina said that thing about, this is bad for men's mental health, and it made me realise, I'm like, no, in order for us lads to keep hold, you know, do things for our own mental health, we're the ones that should be having these conversations. And that's how we'll deal with it.
They're hard truths. And of course it's going to be hard for mental health. yeah. to hear those hard truths and to reassess yourself and think, oh, when's my behaviour been like that? How have I
yeah, exactly.
enabled somebody to be that person? Because yeah. I think, you know, by laws of average, by looking at the numbers, we all know somebody who's a, yeah. you know, a sex criminal or yeah. been violent to a woman or
yeah.
any of those things. By just sheer dint of numbers,
yeah,
you know someone. So we're thinking, what could we have done differently?
Yeah,
absolutely. And that sort of thing is on all of us, but it's more particularly on the men in this toxic masculinity kind of environment where everything's written off as banter.
Yeah, yeah,
and it's not cool, man.
No, it's not. But that's it. That's why we have to have these conversations, and men should talk to each other and call each other out on the yeah. on the bullshit and talk to women as well and really get an understanding of
yeah.
what it feels like. You know, that this is why I want to have these conversations with women, is that so I get a better understanding of, you know, what it feels like. I mean, when I'm out, there is that it's different. I've had my head kicked in a few times by men on trains and things like that. So there is, when a group of lads get on, you go, right, is this going to go that way or is this going to be, and you can tell there's always a bit of, you can feel it. But I'm not thinking, oh, I might get raped and killed. And it's, yeah. so it's different. It's different. And so, yeah, we are having these conversations, by the way. Men are doing that.
I'm glad. Like, I'm glad of that.
So it is happening. And yeah. people listening to this will go off and this will get other conversations started. And yeah, yeah. it's going to be
And
good.
It's hard. It's yeah. hard. But it's like we've all been having harder conversations about race recently.
Mm, yeah.
And it is hard. It's meant to be painful.
Yes.
Because we're reassessing our life decisions and, yeah. and our attitudes and past behaviour. You know, we said right at the top, didn't we? We're always looking back
yeah.
and thinking, what, you know, we're feeling guilty. Well, there's some stuff we should feel guilty for, but
yeah, true.
The more important thing is to learn the lesson from it.
Yeah.
And think, okay, I've been guilty of thinking X, doing Y. Let's change it. Let's flip the script. Now is the time we can do it and we can talk about it.
Yeah.
And educating particularly young men. This yeah. has been the headline thing in the news, you know, today when we're recording, has been all these anonymous descriptions of what's happened in schools.
Yeah, right.
Like our current young men are yeah. still committing nasty acts.
Wow, yeah.
Degrading the young women in our schools. At a time when we're supposed to have better education on this,
yeah.
obviously something is amiss, and there's an education gap there, and
yeah.
it's not necessarily educating the girls, it's educating the boys. Educate your sons is a sign I saw at a protest
yeah, yeah.
on the news the other day. True. Educate your sons.
Yeah, it's true. I said this on another episode that there is something in men we are told. I don't know if we're told or there's something in us that there is a I want to say monster or a creature in us that drives you on, and you're like, oh, she's attractive. Oh, yeah, I'll go and talk to her. And it's talking to boys, young boys, to get, you go, listen, yes, you're going to see someone that you find attractive, but you don't go and grab them. You don't yeah. do this. They're not there for you to fuck yeah. about with.
There's yeah.
respect and their decency, and these are people.
Yeah.
And that's what needs to be. We never really had that growing up. It was just, you know, one day it was always about, you know, you're going to get a job and you're going to meet a woman and then you're going to have kids. That was the line. And
yeah.
Yeah. And it needs to start from a young age.
Yeah. And this all does tie in together. The fact that we can see so many different kinds of people represented and different lifestyles.
Yeah.
And kinder people succeeding.
Yeah.
Kindness winning on even on shows like Drag Race, the kind people, you know, it's all yeah. about kindness and openness. And sharing and joy.
Yeah.
These positive things should be what are driving us and letting us accept that people are different. You don't have to be going down that
yeah.
tunnel vision route of you meet a girl, you grab a girl, you get married to the girl, done.
Yeah.
That's you don't have to live like that if you don't want to.
Exactly.
And that's all good. And the girl could be going, I don't have to be grabbed. Brilliant.
Yeah. If you wouldn't mind not doing that, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be super. Yeah.
Thanks for that. Jenny, this has been amazing. thank you for your time.
It's been very serious today, hasn't it? We've covered a lot.
Well, do you know what? This is the thing. I know because I'm a comedian and people sometimes expect it to be more comedy based, but I actually, I want to learn more and I want to have these chats because I get it wrong. I had a chat with someone the other day for one of these and I could feel, you can't like everybody, but I've got a feeling she wasn't that taken with me. And it got a bit, it was a tricky, and I did come away from it going, whoa, am I shit? Am I? But that's why I do these, because I want to improve. I want people listening to improve themselves.
We're all on a big learning curve, aren't we, though?
Yeah, exactly.
You want to improve, and that's the biggest step.
Yeah, yeah. And also, there are elements of you that's still great. You're not completely shit, just because there's been certain things you might have done or something. Mm. You know what I mean? Again, it goes back to that being fluid, isn't it? It's, you know, there's good and bad in us and we're trying to work it out. And
We're like 90% water. And so just think of us. So we're just flowing.
Yeah, what a beautiful way to put it.
The different particles are being energised with different vibes all the time.
Yeah.
So,
It's all
good.
And it just happens that there's no kind of... Like this has been said before, but there's no kind of destination to any of this. Mm. There's always that, if I achieve that, then I'll feel better and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's like, no, you kind of just, like you say, you're 90% water, you're bobbing along, different things get fired up, and then one day you're not here anymore. There isn't really, that's just it. You're just going to have just to try and make the most of it while you're here.
Exactly. You
know? I think so. But Jenny, this would be lovely. Normally we say, where can we find you online? But I don't know if you want people to do that.
Oh, you can listen to my podcast though.
Oh yeah, what's it called?
Fingers on Buzzers.
There you go.
It's a quizzing based podcast with me and Lucy Porter.
Excellent. Lovely stuff. Jenny, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. It's been lovely. And hopefully I'll get to see you outside in the real world at some point.
Fingers crossed, it's very soon.
When you're feeling in the second circle, obviously.
I've had like over a year to re-energize, so you'd think I'd be all right.
That big old first circle, now it's massive. A paddling pool. Thank you, Jenny. And it's been a pleasure. Ah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.